How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure 4 Daily. It's Tuesday, August 10th, 2010, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Joined today by Brody Lee of Chikara, Dragon Gate USA, number of other promotions as well. And Brody, how you doing today?
I am doing very good. Got done working for the day, got my pizza and a beer, so I'm training and ready to go.
I don't want this to come off like a dating show or anything like that, but what's your height and weight?
I am legitimately 6'7" and 275 pounds.
Okay, now the reason I ask is because obviously like back in the 80s and even the 90s, everybody was big, like big guys in this business. And, you know, I've met some of the older workers and even the guys that weren't like really muscular or really fat, you just meet them and they're just like big people. And
the very thing I've noticed is that they're very dynamic and they take up space. And even today I've noticed when I've done some WWE dark dates that when you go into that locker room, those guys are even bigger than you would think they are, most of them.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I was surprised at how big Jeff Hardy is.
Yeah, you know, Jeff Hardy, I remember when he first went to TNA, this was the first time he went, like in 2005, 2006. You know, they had a lot of small guys on the roster, and you never noticed it until he showed up, and he looked like Brody Lee and Chikara on that show,
right,
actually.
He stands out, and he's in WWE, he's just a normal man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when I walked up into the backstage area, I was amazed at how big these people were.
Yeah, somebody put up some pictures on Facebook. They'd gone to a WWE event, and they met a lot of the guys, and they had all these pictures of them standing next to these wrestlers. And, you know, I wasn't there, but seeing these guys next to normal people, they're
right.
Big people.
Still.
Yeah, they're huge.
And to think back to the 80s and earlier than that these guys were even bigger and in even better shape, if you could even say that, it's crazy.
So the point of the question was, I've seen you working, and you've worked in Chikara, obviously, and what is it like in 2010 being like, you know, you're a really big guy now on the indie scene? I mean, there are a lot of small guys, and you're a giant out there, and what is that like?
To be perfectly honest, it's not a terrible thing to go into a locker room and to tower over people in professional wrestling. I have to say that a lot of my success has been because of my size and learning how to work with my size as opposed to against it, which if you ever look at that in my earlier stuff, I didn't want to be a big man. I wanted to do everything I could, but now I've learned to just use my size, make things bigger, make things hurt more, and just dominate people.
When did you first break in?
I would say it was about 2001. My cousin was doing some things in a ring, surprisingly, just in my area, and he invited me down, and I was hooked. I was a big WCW fan at the time, so I was pretty hooked.
Yeah, I was on your MySpace, and first off, I was unaware that the Brody and Brody Lee was short for Brodacious.
Well, it... It can be short for many things. Brodacious is one of them. And also, just, you know, I didn't get my name from Bruiser Brody, per se. More of the movie Mallrats, and Jason Lee's name in that is Brody, to just calm all those internet rumors.
It's actually funny, because when you hear Brody Lee and you see you work, it's like, oh, well, obviously, it's, you know, big fan of Bruiser Brody. And
right, you would have to think that a person like me with my name and my look would be an idiot to not name himself after Brody Lee, or after Brody, Bruiser Brody, but
yeah.
I didn't.
Now, the MySpace here, I was looking at it, and of course, people can post videos and that sort of thing, and I noticed that, like, one of your videos here is the Steiner Brothers Crash from 1998 with the NWO.
Absolutely.
I thought that was so...
I'll tell you the truth, I haven't been to my MySpace in probably 2 years, so I don't know exactly what's going on there.
Actually, someone else posted that, I'm sorry. August 14th, 2009. I just saw it and I thought, what a random video. What a random classic moment that somebody found right there.
I'm perfectly okay with that being posted.
Now, you were a WCW fan, and, I mean, who were some of your influences? I mean, obviously, you know, you didn't take the name from Bruiser Brody, and probably a little young to have seen a lot of Bruiser Brody, but who were the guys growing up that you just thought were so cool?
I mean, obviously I've watched a lot of Bruiser Brody nowadays that I've gotten able to get a hold of tapes and his work other places. And so watching him now, I've obviously become a fan of him. But, like, back then, Jake the Snake and Rick Rude, which are WWE guys, but, I mean, when I was a little bit older, I was really into the Big Show. And in his first run in WCW, when he was really just going out there and killing people, and I mean, really didn't seem like he had a clue what he was doing, but it didn't matter because it really entertained me. And everything became such a train wreck by that point that I didn't miss TV shows on Monday and Thursday because I wanted to see what was going to happen.
Now, you mentioned the Big Show, and he's obviously a big guy, but he works like a big guy. So when you first started training and you broke in, you mentioned that you didn't want to be a big guy. You wanted to do all of the stuff. And why was that?
I was a fan of Ring of Honor and Japanese wrestling also, and a fan of the WCW Cruiserweights, and basically thought that due to me being semi-athletic and for some reason thought that I would not look goofy doing those things, which proved quite the contrary.
Now, I've seen some of your more recent stuff, and you know, there was a shot of Claudio press slamming you over the top to the floor, which, first off, Claudio press slamming you is astounding. He's a freak. But
Claudio Castagnoli is a remarkable man. He is the strongest man I've ever met. He's the only man that I know that can enter a bodybuilding contest in a not peak condition and win it.
Yeah.
And the thing about it was, it's just his condition every day.
Yeah. He press slammed you over the top, this remarkable man, and you know, it's a big bump for a big guy. And I've seen a lot of other stuff, and I guess, you know, when you see you working nowadays, you're still doing more stuff than your average big guy does. I mean, you're certainly no Sid or Kevin Nash or anything like that, but I guess tell us a little bit about what you used to do that you've removed from your arsenal.
First of all, I wouldn't hate to be Sid or Kevin Nash because they're both great, but a lot of arm drags, a lot of diving things off the ropes, a lot of lucha things, dives outside of the ring. I used to try moonsaults in practice and then not be able to walk for a week. Anything you can think of that a cruiserweight would do, I've been told not to do anymore.
Now, did you approach Chikara, or did Chikara approach you? Is it something where you saw all the lucha and high-flying and thought, God, this would be fun, or did they see you and think, wow, a big guy we could do something with?
They definitely didn't see me, because at that time I was just doing a different gimmick, which was me just having fun and doing my thing and being a cruiserweight. And I went to a show with the Olsen Twins, and I think it was 2007, and we're sitting in the pre-show meeting, and Reckless Youth hadn't shown up yet. So the Olsen Twins put me over to Quackenbush, and during the meeting he just said, is Brody Lee here? And I said, yep. And he said, all right, you're in a match tonight. And from there on in, I did two matches as my old gimmick, went away for 6 months, and then came back as what I am now. So thank you, Reckless Youth.
That's how it often happens, actually. Some dude doesn't show up, and you brought your gear.
Exactly.
Now, I noticed when you tell that story, you mentioned the different gimmick several times without mentioning what it was.
I was trying to avoid that, but no. I used to be the Right Stuff Brody Lee, and I wore tassels, and I was pretty, I guess I was entertaining. I'm not going to say I wasn't, but it wasn't what it should have been.
Now, when you went in there as the Right Stuff Brody Lee with all of your tassels, you mentioned having two matches, leaving, and then coming back with, I guess, the new Brody Lee. Was this something where Quackenbush afterwards sat you down and said, look, the tassels have got to go? Or was this your decision?
At the time, it was kind of like a mutual thing, but Mitch Ryder actually had come to me and discussed this with me with Quackenbush's blessing. And through some email and phone discussions, we came up with the whole new thing and then just went with it full force for the next few months. So I literally have to thank Mitch Ryder for a lot.
Now, you went undefeated for the first year. I was reading some of the storylines here, and you know, Mike Quackenbush always gets votes for best booker. And I don't mean this in a derogatory way at all. I like Mike Quackenbush. He's been on the show. This is not a knock, but when I read the storyline of you and Claudio Castagnoli, it was really good. But my first thought was like, I don't know if like Mike Quackenbush is an awesome booker or if he's just a really good booker and everyone else in this business just completely sucks. Because
I don't know exactly. I think it's like saying that Dana White booked Cale Sonnen and Anderson Silva to do what they did.
Sure.
Like, you can book exactly what you want to happen, but the guys still have to go out there and do it. And the way they do it is going to be their own touch. So you just take that story and make what you can of it. And with Claudio, I've never had better chemistry with somebody, and literally that was an amazing year for me.
Basically what happened is you were going around beating up a bunch of little dudes.
Right.
And then Claudio comes along, and he's also big, and he challenges you to a match. And
you
have one match that ends in a DQ when one of you kicks the ref. Then in the second match, the other one kicks the ref, which builds to a no DQ match, which builds to Claudio getting fucked. And then you have a cage match, which the babyface wins. It's like, this is...
Mr. Albert, it's fairly academic, I understand.
What's the point? It's like, this is perfect. You know what I mean? It's perfect pro wrestling booking. And I just look at everyone else, and they're just all too stupid to do stuff this easy.
And I think what it is that... less can so be more. Like, you don't need 1,000 things involved in the storyline. It was me and Claudio. It was Claudio saying, you know what, you're a big guy. I don't like what you're doing. I'm going to stop you. And it's me saying, no, you're not. And that was the angle.
Yeah, and I didn't even see all of it, but I just read about it, and I thought, that's perfect. That is perfect pro wrestling booking.
It went all the way down to where we got DQ'd a bunch of times, couldn't keep it in control. Had some wild brawls, and then it all came down and culminated in a cage match.
So anyway, Mike Quackenbush may in fact be the best booker.
Right.
But that's a large part of that. Again, no disrespect to Mike Quackenbush, but a large part of that is because nobody else actually knows how to book. So.
And that's the thing I don't understand. Like when you talk about a TNA, when I watched the show this Sunday, and I walked away pleased, just because I turned to my friend and said, wow, that actually built to the main event. It was different than any other TNA pay-per-view I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
The fact that the end was, the last two or three matches were bigger than anything that happened before it and actually built to that amazed me.
Yeah. I watched a lot of TNA pay-per-views and come out of it offended, and I was not offended at all by the show on Sunday. So,
exactly.
Congratulations to them.
Right. Like,
now, how did the
good start.
How did your stint in ROH come about?
I actually had just finished up a show with Chikara. I was down in Philadelphia hanging out at Downey's on South Street, which is a popular hangout, and got a call from Gabe Sapolsky, asked me to come in, and at the time I was headed to England and Germany for 3 weeks. So he said, okay, as soon as you come back, give me a call. Gave him a call when I came back, and I believe, I don't know if it was September 25th or something, the debut against, where I did a run-in on Aries, and then I did a match with Delirious against Chico Cloudy. And then from there, that night, Gabe Sapolsky got fired, and it went from there.
Now, looking back at your career, I guess how long has it been since you've been actively wrestling?
2001, 2002, I definitely started wrestling. And then I would say that I was actually a wrestler from 2007 till now.
It's kind of actually astounding that with your size and everything that it took like 5 years to have it really take off.
Right, and the thing is, I never really understood the whole business aspect of it. I never understood... I just didn't understand that I was presenting a product to people. And when I started to understand that more, things started picking up. So I think the whole beginning of my career, I kind of just write off as a really good learning experience, but kind of wish it would have went a lot different.
In what way?
I wish I would have been trained better and probably by more people and... possibly just gone to... I tell people now when they come to train in Rochester, I say, do you want to wrestle for a living? And when they say yes, I say, go to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not going to get that training up here. And no offense to anybody around here or anything like that, but I just don't think there's nothing reputable here. I said, tell them to go to Landstorm School, stuff like that. If you're going to do it right. And I didn't do it right.
Well, tell us a little bit about that experience.
I wasn't poorly trained. I was trained by Rick Matrix here in Rochester. And literally it was 6 months of just falling down a lot and getting dropped by him a lot in different ways. And so, I mean, that really built up the thick skin I needed to be a wrestler. From there, Dunn and Marcos of old ROH fame live in my area. And they would come down to the school, and they showed me so much more of, like, different styles and stuff like that. And then from there, Tony Mameluk lived in Schenectady, which is about 3 hours from here. And about three or four of us would go down there about every 2-3 weeks for about 4 or 5 times. And he would just show us, like, these real cool shoot things and just the real inner workings of pro wrestling.
Now, you've mentioned, I guess you mentioned Florida there. Are you speaking specifically of the WWE? I don't even know, actually, if Developmental has a school for those that are not under contract. But who in particular are you talking about down there?
Well, that's what I mean. Like if I see a kid come in who's 6'5" and 250 and in shape, and I'd say, don't come to this school because you're going to get used wrong, or you need somebody to see you.
Sure.
I tell them to send them right away to Florida.
Yeah.
To WWE, because if they see that, they'll bring you in first and teach you how to wrestle.
Yeah.
As opposed to learning up here and something possibly going wrong, or you not liking it, or this, all this stuff that could happen. So I try to get people to skip the step of, you know, going to your regional or local school, unless it's super reputable, like Chikara, like the Ring of Honor school, like Lance Storms, or like WWE.
How many WWE tryouts have you gotten?
I would term zero of them tryouts, but I have been there 6 times now, and I've worked out for them every time, and literally not gotten an ounce of feedback.
Interesting. That surprises me, actually, because usually tall guy, immediate interest.
Right, and I don't know if, I honestly don't know what it is, but I don't know if they don't like me or what it is, but they call me still to come do darts and or, like, do extra work still, so I don't honestly know.
Yeah,
I'm not even positive I want to work there full-time,
yeah.
And I know that you probably don't hear independent wrestlers say that, but I don't know if I could.
Yeah, I would guess that if they don't like you, they wouldn't keep calling you. So probably it's a good thing for now.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, I go, eat some catering, whatever. It's all right.
Now, you talked about the starting ROH the weekend that Gabe was fired. And
it was the exact day.
The exact day. do you know what the plans were around that time and how things turned out?
Very, 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 very different.
Yeah.
Basically, the plan was me to just go on a roll there and kind of be the bodyguard for Jimmy Jacobs and Delirious at the time and be their muscle and take care of people for them.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually leading to a showdown. I believe Gabe said this in his guest booker piece where the showdown would be in New York City with me and Necro Butcher. And what ended up happening was I wrestled Necro Butcher the next week in Montreal.
Hmm. Kind of a little bit rushed.
Right. So, and I can't blame the current regime that's there for anything. I just didn't fit in at the time. So,
what do you think of Necro shaving his head? I just saw him with his shaved head last night on ROH TV and thought he looked like Ivan Koloff in 2010 and maybe even older.
Anything Necro wants to do, he can do. I'm not going to tell him different. I prefer the wild, crazy look. We've actually been tagging a lot up around this area, especially in Jersey. And I definitely prefer him with the wild and crazy hair.
Now,
he's another man I owe a ton to because he's taught me so much about the business inside and out.
I'm a big fan of Necro. He's been on the show. He's a really nice guy. But I have to ask, is it better teaming with him than facing him? My guess would be yes.
I prefer to always have Necro Butcher on my side of the ring.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Now, you're doing some stuff with Evolve as well. You had the match with Jon Moxley. I know that Gabe liked that match. What were your thoughts on it?
I actually loved it. I didn't think that me and Jon Moxley really kind of fit into the mold of the almost MMA-type promotion, but I think we bring the level of just fighting, of just coming out and fist fighting, and I think that's what we did. And the ending worked, and they actually ended up suspending me out of the deal. So, but I actually liked it a lot. Jon Moxley is a great talent. He can talk his ass off, and I look forward to doing a lot more with him.
Has Gabe given you any sort of advice in terms of working, in terms of interviews, your character, anything like that?
Basically, just be big. anything a cruiserweight does, I don't do.
So basically, this is what you were talking about earlier, about
right.
being told, no more of this.
But even, and Claudia used to tell me that every time, and there's many people that have told me, you know, and Robert Strong and Ring of Honor, and all these people have told me, and it's still, it's so much, you have to pay attention 100% of the time, because if I slouch a little bit, or I pick somebody else different, like, it changes the whole dynamic of how people are looking at me.
Yeah. Now, have they talked to you about doing these big flashy moves? Like, I guess the analogy I would make is if you remember that Brock Lesnar Kurt Angle match, mm-hmm. and granted he landed on his head, but
right.
Brock was going to whip out the shooting star press in the main event of WrestleMania. It was like,
right.
if he was going to do it one time, this was
right.
the time was to do it. And have they talked to you about this?
I mean, I don't know if that spot's going to come soon, but I mean, if that spot was to come for me and it was that big of a stage or that big of a deal and something needed to be bigger, there's things I can do and I'm not opposed to doing. So you might see that in the near future.
Because I remember they always talking about Big Show or the Giant in WCW and how...
With his moonsault.
Yeah, the power plant, he would do moonsaults, and...
I don't believe it.
I don't know if I believe it either, but you know, it was like, you wouldn't want Big Show out there in every match doing a moonsault, but...
Correct.
If
exactly.
if the time came where he's, you know, facing whoever at the big show of the year, and the big spot at the end of the match requires right. him, or not even requires, but could work out well with him doing a moonsault, that's the time you do it once.
Absolutely, and a kind of a thing for that is I was feuding with Incoherence and Hollow Wicked and Chikara, and one of Hollow Wicked's moves is a step-up Hurricanrana.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of our thing, in the last match, I hit one, and literally the place came unglued because they've probably never seen anything like it, and it just came at the perfect spot out of nowhere, and I maybe done it once or twice more in the past 9 months.
Yeah.
So I guess that would be the one.
Now, the last Dragon Gate show, you'd been beating up a lot of dudes, and then the cliffhanger, I guess, was your announcement that now you were coming after a Japanese man. And
that is correct.
Are you aware of how this is going, or does Gabe kind of just give you the storyline one step at a time, and you do not yet know who this Japanese man is going to be?
In Dragon Gate, I really just show up and say, when am I on, and I just go out there and do whatever I want to do, pretty much. There's no set person in the sights right now. I literally said it because I don't want the same thing to happen and just kind of get lost in the shuffle. I want to make the impact now as opposed to just let it go away. So, like, if this was Ring of Honor in 2007, I don't want to let that chance go away again. So I'm going to make it happen.
Have you had a chance to talk to Jim Cornette, and has he given you any advice?
Cornette was not around by the time I was doing ROH TV, so I have not met him. I met him way back when I was doing Ring of Honor Ring Crew in, like, 2002. He was doing some shots with him. And all I could say is that he was very entertaining, ripping people on the phone with the Briscoe brothers in the back.
We've got a bunch of questions here for you. I want to get into some of these so people don't get very upset. This person wants your favorite quote from Mallrats as a big fan.
I don't know. There's so many good ones. I might just have to go with the Sandler one.
The Sandler. Actually, they put a bunch of quotes here on this thread, but unfortunately, I've not seen the film, so I don't understand half of them. But
I don't know the exact quote, but there's something about the guy being a Santa Claus, and I mean, I don't want people to think I'm obsessed with the movie, so I don't know the quote exact.
This isn't like The Big Lebowski or anything like that.
Right, so I apologize.
This person wants to know, actually, this story I was going to ask you about, apparently, like, the Colin Delaney role in ECW could have gone to you, but you were just too big to be Colin Delaney. Is that true?
This is actually a really great story. This is like my third time there, and this was the one. I had just been in Buffalo the night before, and I was in Rochester, and I was actually there with my buddy Pepper Parks, and we were just hanging out all day, and then Jamie Noble comes down to the ring and just looking around, and he just looks at us and he goes, "You know any small guys around here?" And I go, "Well, yeah, I do." And so I actually called up Jimmy Olsen first. He didn't answer.
Oh.
So then I called Colin Olsen, and I said, "How fast can you be to the Blue Cross Arena?" And he said, "Well, I'm working right now, but I can be there in 10 minutes.
This is like the Hulk Hogan story with the wacky
get
grill.
Right down here. So me and Noble walked outside, and Noble asked me why I didn't say anything to him earlier. And I said, "Well, you didn't ask." And then Colin came walking up with shooter boots around his neck. And Noble goes, "That's fucking perfect." And grabbed him and walked away.
The rest is history.
And then the thing happened with Shelton, and me and Pepper are still back there. And they walk into the back, and when he walks to the back, Johnny Ace has him by the arm and just walks him through everybody, and he's gone again. And he comes back out, and he said, "They're flying me to Richmond next week." And the rest was history.
Now, this person's question was actually, how much did it suck to lose that spot? But to me, it's almost like, you know, once you get that spot and they're done with you, it's real tough to be brought back. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's almost like you're lucky this wasn't you.
Right, and I mean, I would love to be on WWE TV maybe once in my life or whatever, you know, to say that I did it. But if they want to hire me, I don't want that part of it.
Yeah.
I want, but no, I don't think it sucks at all. I was really happy that I was able to help somebody out, and then the fact that it turned out the way it did was incredible and something I'll never ever forget.
This person says, who came up with the idea of the big rig trucker gimmick? He says it was a vast improvement over the right stuff.
Well, thank you. And Mitch Ryder.
Yeah, there you go. This person wants to know, has there ever been a couple of fans or a fan who just pissed you off to the point where you wanted to punch them in the face?
Here's another good story. One time in Binghamton, New York, I did a big brawl. It was a 4-on-4, and we were in and out of the crowd, and people were drunk. $2 mixed drinks at this place. It was ridiculous. So people were just dumping drinks on us and stuff. So match ends, and I'm yelling at people, and all of a sudden I see out of the corner of my eye this man walk in the back door, grab a chair from the fourth row, and just throw it in the ring. So I proceeded to jump the guardrail, chase him to the parking lot, fight him, come back inside, fight another fan on the way inside, and then be told to leave because the cops are coming.
Jesus.
So, yes, there's many instances like that.
You are the second coming of Bruiser Brody here.
Well, honestly, it's like, it's our ring, and we're taking care of each other in the ring. And for somebody to come in a door and throw a chair 20 feet straight up in the air when he's drunk out of his mind and not knowing what he's doing really just brought me to another level of anger. So,
yeah.
Because it was my friends in the ring, and so, yeah.
This person wants you to discuss the greatness of wrestling former WWF jobber Lord Zoltan.
Lord Zoltan is a great man. If you want to look him up, his name is Ken Jennings. He actually was a jobber in, like, the 80s for WWE, and he became a referee. And I asked him one time why he did that, and he said, "Well, the referees make more money." And I said, "Okay." So, but then he just stayed around the Pittsburgh area, and then he came up with this gimmick, Lord Zoltan, and he must have been 50 or 60 when we wrestled, and I gave him a pile driver, and I went to the back, and I'm standing around, and the show had stopped. And I thought, I didn't know what happened, and I ran, you know, I was freaking out. And the show stopped because he's still down in the ring. And I'm like, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. So they get him out of the ring, he comes to the back, and he pops right up, looks right at me, and goes, I think we're going to make some money now, kid. And I, and I said, wow. And I sat down and talked to him for the next, like, 3 or 4 hours just about everything.
Wow.
And the fact that he could sell a move for 20 minutes in 2009 really warmed me to him.
That's awesome. This person says, inquire about commentating college hockey.
I feel like this is maybe my friend Mookie.
Yes, it is, in fact, Mookie. He's planted some questions here for you.
Oh, that's fine. That's good. He actually gave me some, too, so it's good. I actually did some work for the local Division I team, which is the Rochester Institute of Technology. I did a couple seasons just doing color commentary for them, and it was awesome.
Is this something where, like, in the future, because, I mean, you always look at, like, Taz, and sometimes you'll hear people say, man, poor Taz, he used to be the human, you know, wrecking machine. Now he's just a commentator. And I'm always thinking, good for Taz, you know? This guy's been making money for years after he should have been axed.
Right. Taz said something very telling on the TNA broadcast on Sunday. He said, Joey Styles made people believe that I was a legitimate badass for however many years. Now, I think Taz knows that he's in a much better spot behind that desk doing what he's doing now, like you said.
Yeah. Now, has this ever been a thought that has crossed your mind of, you know, if for example, WWE offered me a job as say they heard my college hockey commentary and offered me this job as an NXT broadcaster, would you be open to that?
I don't know. I feel like they would ask me to shave, and I don't know if I'm down with that.
The biggest announcer of all time.
If they did offer me that spot, I would take it in a heartbeat.
You could do the Frank Mir gimmick where you get in the ring and you tower over everybody you're interviewing.
I love Frank Mir interviews. And I love Frank Mir talking at all times also.
He's a great man.
He is something.
And Mookie also wants you to tell the story of wrestling a TLC match in exchange for dinner.
Which is actually bullshit because I didn't get dinner. But we did this crazy TLC match, and I actually had heat with the promoter because he wasn't paying us. So I was the only one in the whole promotion that said anything to him. So he was like, well, I'm buying you guys dinner. And so I was so pissed off that I didn't go out that night with everybody. So he bought the other three guys dinner, and I never got my dinner.
You need to go back and you know, have them make this right.
Well, I still work for the man. And at the last show, I did a cage match for him. And when we were at the bar, I actually made him give me a raise. So it was pretty neat.
There you go.
So it all comes around.
And he also wants you to talk about Dewey. I'd actually almost completely forgotten about Dewey. I guess he's one of the guys that got his head shaved on SmackDown as part of the SES.
He is, and he is a character. he's actually a really great kid, and the fact that, and people, you know how people, everybody around here just buries him because, you know, he's this big fat guy who doesn't do it, but he knows how to work, what we were talking about, he knows how to work with his size and be entertaining with it. And the fact that WWE called him specifically to come to Ottawa to do the angle really was awesome, and I really just hope everything works out for this kid. He's a great kid, and he was actually supposed to go to AAA, but I think they just canceled it on him.
That sucks.
Yeah. Well, I tend to believe that it doesn't suck for him, because I didn't really want him going down there.
I was actually going to ask, are you open to the idea of traveling to Mexico if the opportunity should arise?
Mexico is like the one place in probably the entire world that I'm not super interested in going. If they offered me a weekend shot or a week shot or something like that, I would go down and do it in a heartbeat, but I don't really have desire to spend time there. I've been told horror stories by other people.
Yeah.
And just things, I don't know, I'm just not real super keen on it.
You haven't worked Japan yet, have you?
No, I have not. That is my next goal.
A lot of these things surprise me, because it's like, you know, Japan historically and Mexico, you know, if you're a big white guy that can work the style, you're in.
Right, and I think if I even had a second in WWE, I would have no problems.
Yeah.
But I think that, and I think maybe as my name gets out there more and more, maybe it'll become okay, but as of now, I'm nothing.
This person wants to know, who on the Dragon Gate roster would you most like to run over? And he says to let you know that you versus Susumu is his all-time dream match of the week.
Excellent. I would love to run over, I don't know if I would run him over, but I would love to try to run over Shingo and Dragon Kid and Stalker Ichikawa.
Actually, Dragon Kid, it's very likely you could run him over. Let's be honest.
And I don't know if I would catch him, but if I did get my hands on him, it would be an issue.
That's right. Got a question here. How are things with your new best mate, Frank Talent?
Oh, my Lord. At this freaking Dragon Gate show last weekend, I did a run-in. This is all in the pre-show. Did a run-in, and on my way out, must have hit the timekeeper's table. Well, I turned back around the aisle, and I don't know if you know who Frank Talent is, the director of the commission of Pennsylvania Athletic Commission. He's standing, he must be 70, standing toe-to-toe with me. And I'm looking down, like, what? And he's screaming at me, "You don't touch that fucking table. I don't know what the fuck about this." And I'm like, whoa. So I start screaming back at him. So we get to the back, and he grabs Gabe, and he's like, "You tell this SOB to get out of my building. He's not allowed back in here. You don't bring him back in here. He's done."
And wow.
So, so Gabe goes, "Go outside," because I was about to yell back at him. Gabe goes, no, go outside and just stay there. So I go outside, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Gabe comes and gets me, and he goes, "Listen, just tell him yes to everything he says." And I go, "Gabe, I'll go apologize to him right now." So I walk up to Frank Talent, and I say, "Mr. Talent, let me apologize." And before I can get that out, he goes, "Brody, I am so sorry. I don't know what got into me. I am so sorry." And he just apologizes for the next 10 minutes, and then we walk through the locker room, and he threatens people, saying that I'm going to get him because we're best friends now.
Wow.
So, welcome to Philadelphia.
How about that? Frank Talent is a
crazy, crazy, crazy man.
I had not heard that story.
It was pretty interesting.
Well, now you got it in there.
Right.
Now, you just bumped the table? What set him off in the first place?
He claims that I almost hurt the doctor. And the doctor came up to me and was like, "No, you didn't even touch me."
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think he just lost his mind. But He even said to me, he goes, "I don't know what I was thinking. When I was looking up at you, I was scared to death." this is all. I mean, like, he's now my best friend.
Yeah.
Like, literally, he's threatening, like, hey, you working with him tonight? You better be careful because he's my friend. And I'm like, yeah, and I just stand there and smile.
This person wants your thoughts on the greatness that is Roadblock.
Roadblock, who is from Rochester, New York, which is where I'm from. I only did one angle with him at some random indie show way when I was a kid. I was 22. This is a long time ago. And did an angle where he rolled in the ring after we beat somebody up. He picked the guy up, and he hit the move on him. He rolled out of the ring and walked out the front door, and I never saw him again. So
That's
that was my time with the Rochester Roadblock.
We got more questions here from Mookie before we wrap it up here.
Okay.
This person wants to know, Mookie, he says, tell us your thoughts when you... He should just be here helping do this interview. Thoughts when you first saw a sneak preview of See No Evil.
I loved See No Evil. The fact that it consisted of a person getting killed with a cell phone being jammed down their throat and also involved Kane masturbating in a cage... 5 stars.
You know what's funny is See No Evil, I think, is still the best grossing WWE film they've ever done.
Easily. And the fact that they haven't made another full horror film after that is beyond me because it's the easiest genre to do B films in.
And these are some B films they're doing.
Exactly.
This person says, Mookie again, longest match you've ever had and the best match you ever had, plus the first match you were ever paid for.
Longest match is probably me, Steve Corino, which was probably like 2006, and that was just him wanting to go. And we did, and it was like 34 minutes, and didn't feel like it, but it was. My best match, probably something with Claudio Castagnoli. We've had a whole bunch of really good ones, and I've really, as each one got better, I would probably say the cage match in 2009 was my favorite. So, and the first match I got paid for, whew, I can't remember. There's a difference between getting paid for something and making a profit.
I was going to say,
I don't know when that turned.
$25, one of those right. type of deals, yeah.
Yeah.
And the final one here, I got to ask about this because I'm actually jealous. He says, mm-hmm. Talk about getting a chance to work out with William Regal.
Oh, that was, and one of my, it sounds a lot better than it actually is, but at one of my WWE extra things, we were all around the ring, and he was just sitting there. And I just went up to him, and I said, hey, I'm wondering if you could show me. And I really just wanted to know how to properly put on a top double wrist lock. And I knew he knew probably 100 of them. So I just asked him if he could properly show me that. And that turned into an hour and a half of him showing us things.
Really?
In the ring. Yeah, and just, you know, this is how you sell this. This is how you do this. You know, if you don't understand how to sell this, go home and twist it, and you'll see how to sell it. But just all these little things, and the fact that he's not training people somewhere is very upsetting to me.
But I love that advice. If you don't know what it feels like, go home and twist it, and then you'll know.
If you feel a wrist lock, and you go twist your wrist.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. It's a hold.
I've said this many times. When I see guys training, because my friend, Buddy Wayne, has a wrestling school around here, and I go there and I watch the guys training, and, you know, you see these guys that, you know, they get kicked in the stomach, and they sell the exact same way they sell getting hit in the face, and part of me,
right.
I always just think, you know, I'd love to kick you in the stomach and punch you in the face just once, so you know
exactly.
that you sell these in two completely different ways.
I've actually been to a Steamboat Pritchard seminar back in, like, way, 5 years ago or so, where Steamboat literally would hit somebody with something. If they didn't sell it right, he would just knee him in the gut. And then be like, okay, there you go. Or slap him in the face.
Yeah.
And he would say, I don't know how many of you guys have been in a fight, but think about you walking away from the fight. Or think about, like, you going to the hospital with an injury. You know, stuff like that, like, there's different ways of portraying pain in different ways.
Or not even pain. I mean, the other one that Buddy used to always mention was, right. you know, you take the guy to the corner and the referee gives you the 5 count and you break it up. He would always freak out and he would say, when the ref breaks it up, the guy in the corner should always put his fists up. Because
oh my God.
If you were in a fight, why would you not do that?
Especially if I'm the bad guy and I come in, I back that guy in, and his hands are numb, I might just punch him in the mouth.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
And that's my issue with a lot of the training is I get so frustrated watching people train or watching people get trained. I'm sure it's different with Buddy Wayne, but like around here where there's 7 schools and 3 legitimate professional wrestlers in the area, it just becomes a terrible thing for pro wrestling, and it's very frustrating. And then it becomes a thing where, well, do I tell them I don't want to work for them because I don't like what they're doing, or do I say no to that money? And it becomes a whole thing where if people aren't united, nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
Which is almost impossible.
Now, you've got Dragon Gate shows coming up through the end of the year and some Chikara shows as well. So go ahead and get the word out.
September 25th and 26th, I'll be in Chicago and Milwaukee for Dragon Gate USA. Before that, the weekend of September 10th, 11th, and 12th, I'll be in Germany for WXW. And I have Chikara August 28th, September 18th in Baltimore, and then October 23rd. So that's pretty much the stuff I have going on right now.
No shortage of fun stuff coming up.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually really funny. In August, I'm traveling 100 miles for 6 shows. And in September, I'm traveling 6,000 miles for 8 shows.
Wow. That's pretty great that you get a chance to go to Germany and stuff like that, though. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. this will be my fourth time over to Germany, and I went to France last year with PCO, and went to England before that, and I literally, wrestling has given me so much more than I ever imagined it would. Like, to think that 4 years ago, somebody would be interviewing me, asking me about me, is mind-blowing. So.
Well, it was a hell of an interview. I want to say that. You did an excellent job here. And hopefully, at some point down the road, we'll get you on again. Obviously, tons of stuff to talk about. Most of it was from Mookie today. But I think as you do more of the Dragon Gate shows and stuff like that, people start coming up with some real good stuff. So I want to thank you very much for doing it. Fine job today.
Thank you very much. Enjoy your site. Enjoy everything. I enjoy Meltzer. I need Buddy Wayne back.
We'll get Buddy Wayne back.
I know
there's
more Brett Kremens.
People are trying to get a scandal started here on the board, but we'll get him back. And actually, if you've heard about Brent, he did just email me saying that we need to schedule him for the show. He was delighted by last week's program, spending an hour talking about his hijinks at the wedding. So he will be back soon, everybody, for those concerned. So
the one thing is, I would love to come out there sometime if I'm anywhere near there and come out and train with Buddy at some point, and or just literally go get a beer with Buddy.
Yeah, well, if you're ever coming out here, I know there's I shouldn't say absolutely no wrestling because, you know, Cade would get upset. But, you know, there's very little wrestling out here. But if you ever do come out here, we'll make sure to set that up.
And if somebody steals the money, I'll stop them.
That's right. All right, so thanks again, and thanks everybody for listening. We're going to talk to you later on tonight, brand new Brian and Vinny show, and a lot of other stuff coming up as well. So check it out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.